This is Batman. Comic Timing is a proud member of the Comics Podcast Network. It's what it does, because I'm Batman.
Hey there, folks. My name's Ian Levenstein, and welcome to episode, I guess this is technically episode 62 of Comic Timing, even though it'll probably even go before 61, but I'm crazy like that. We are live from New York Comic Con. This is day one. This is Friday, and I'm starting things off nice and good with I guess I can call him a Comic Timing veteran since he was on that one episode once upon a time. Making his way over to the East Coast, Julian Lytle. How you doing, man?
What's good? What's popping off?
Not too much. So you got yourself set up with some sweet digs yourself this time around, too, huh? Right? You got yourself a table?
Got myself a table once. It took me out last year when I came back.
What are you expecting to find here? I mean, you going for the commissions mostly? You going for what? Just meeting fans, schmoozing a little bit?
Just trying to get some commissions and meet some more editors. Yeah. Them parties up. I'm like, like Entourage.
Well, you hit up a party last night already, right?
That's right.
Oh my God,
that's some good people. That's some editors.
I was just trying to fall asleep last night, man. That's all it was for me. Oh, dear God. Juan's already trying to make a fool of himself. What else is new? Now, are you amazed by the size of this place? Because it seems like every single year it just keeps on getting bigger and bigger.
Because they know Geek's got that money.
Well, you should have seen what the setup was like last year. It was a 2-4 situation.
Oh, I was here. I was just walking around. I was doing hero clicks.
There you go. All right. Yeah. I think I ran into you once or twice when you were around the arena. Mostly hung out with you most at San Diego, which was a hell of a lot of fun in itself. I'm trying to get my ass out there this year, man.
Got to, man. I'm going to be out there. It's all about the hype.
Oh,
after
my
the show.
God. Yeah, tell me about it. And I mean, the digs they have here for Podcast Arena, I think it's a lot nicer this time around, too. You got a nice, a lot more space to deal with.
Yeah, this is kind of where my artist alley table was year one.
Uh-huh.
Back in the day when I was across from Comic Geek speaking Mike Norton, and everybody was locked in because they had no space.
Right.
And this is like the whole first year con right here.
Well, actually, last year, I mean, the first year con was actually downstairs, if memory serves me right.
This was like right here. This is where it was at.
Right. And I think actually that's where New York Anime Fest took place this year. In the downstairs area where New York Comic Con took place last year, first year, that's where that was. And it's amazing. You compare the hall space. This is like triple what it was the first year around.
Yeah, man. It's crazy how they keep growing and growing and growing.
Yeah. You got a whisk going yet for your sketches or anything? You got that going?
I've done four. I got four more to do.
Nice. Well, I'm going to be hitting you up for one also. How much you charging anyway? Just so
20.
I know. 20?
Nice. You look vicious.
Nice solid 20, dude. Nice solid 20.
I got a little color. I got gray. Got the ink.
You looking to head up any, obviously since you got a table, I doubt it, but you looking to head up any panels while you're here? Or?
Nah, I'm going to be gangster and look at Newsarama while I'm sitting at my table.
There you go. That's what I'm talking about, man.
I got spies out anyway.
Oh, yeah? The spy who shagged you?
No. They're pretty spies, not yet.
Well, you heard that they actually made a script for the fourth Austin Powers? They're actually looking forward to that now?
Oh, man.
Yeah, I know. They're just going to recycle all the jokes from the first three, I'm sure, and just do that over and over again. But
he needs a new character.
What the hell is it? What the hell is he going to do for a new character, though, you know?
I don't know. He still had that crazy dude from the SNL with the glasses in the...
It could be. And standing here right now giving me the... Yeah, Chris. Come on, please. You are one. You're standing right here.
No,
please. Oh, snap. Well, we're going to be here all... we're going to be here all weekend long talking to random people and all that. Give people your website one more time, Julian, for the hell of it.
www.julianlytle.com.
Terrific, man. And, we might even get you on again sometime, some point during this. I'll be doing the roving reporting shit like I did last year also with the iRiver.
Yeah,
so.
I'll be walking around because that's what I do.
Hell yeah, man. That's what you do because you're Batman. Sorry, I had a Raph moment there. Don't mind me. All right, dude. Thanks for joining us here. And, we're going to have a bunch more people here as the con goes on in New York Comic Con, but obviously this is recording number one, so you'll be hearing in about 5 seconds. I don't know when the next one's going to take place for me, but once again, thanks for joining us, man.
All right, thanks, man. Holla back.
All right, man. Okay, here we are back on Comic Timing. Got our first interview here at the booth, other than Julian, and introduce yourself to the crowd out there.
Hi, my name is Josh Dahl. I'm the writer of Rapid City for Monolith LLC.
Is this your first work in the business? Have you done other stuff before? Or?
My main partners in Monolith and I worked together about maybe 10 years ago with a few small press companies in Detroit, Blue, Blink, with, in the middle of the 90s boom.
Right.
There was a lot of unsuccessful comics coming out. We were several of those.
Right. Explain Monolith to the folks out there.
Monolith is our small press comic book company. This is our first major convention showing right here with our book, Rapid City B-Sides. Mm-hmm. And basically, we are three friends doing superhero comics.
Great. And Rapid City, what type of comic is it? I mean, what
Rapid
genre
City
would you put it under?
Rapid City is a superhero comic book, mm-hmm. loosely based on real things that happened to me.
Okay.
It's a semi-autobiographical superhero stories about real events in the Kalamazoo, Michigan punk rock scene,
mm-hmm.
where the controlling metaphor is that powers equal music. The reason
right.
that people, the reasons good and bad that people get into music
mm-hmm.
equal the reasons good and bad that people get into comics.
Right, right.
Comics. People, you know what I'm talking about.
I know what you're talking about. What type of music are you generally into?
I like a lot of pop punk.
Okay.
I like all kinds of stuff, but generally if you turn on my MP3 player, chances are Rancid, Green Day, Dropkick Murphys.
Right, right, right. That sort of stuff. What type of art should we be finding in the book? I mean, is it more contemporary style or more geared towards some of those new influences we're getting out of Japan these days?
There is surprisingly little Japanese influence
okay.
in it. Our lead design artist, Jason Krause,
mm-hmm.
came pretty heavily out of the 90s style of artwork, but, you know, grew and mature with it. And so he's,
uh-huh.
you could see it in there.
Right, right.
But it's a very competent storytelling style. But he's got a 5-year-old daughter
oh.
who loves Cartoon Network,
uh-huh.
who loves Teen Titans, who loves Ben 10.
Right,
so,
right.
So, without meaning to,
oh, some of that influence
all of that
squeaks
is,
in there.
I don't think he would ever tell you that he's heavily influenced by Japanese animation.
But it'll happen.
But it's in there, the good parts, the stuff he wants to draw.
Right, awesome. You got a website out there for everybody?
Yes, we do. It's www.monolithllc.com.
Terrific. And can they get the comic from the website? Or
there has been a glitch in
okay.
the print-on-demand company's
uh-huh.
sales page.
Okay.
But as soon as that is fixed, which it may well be fixed right now, there's
mm-hmm.
a little trouble early in the week.
Yeah.
Far as I know, it's good to go.
Excellent. Excellent. All right, great. Well, thanks for joining us here, and hopefully more people will know who you exist now.
Well, thanks. My pleasure.
Take it easy. All right, back here nice and quickly here on Comic Timing. I'm here with Stephen Anzac, who is both a writer of short story collections and of comic books. Stephen, how you doing?
Doing good. How are you doing?
Not too bad. Tell us a little bit about your works here.
Well, we have a comic book company called VLE Comics,
mm-hmm.
And our little catchphrase is New Legends, No Tights,
uh-huh.
which you can see on my shirt. and that's our whole concept is we're not necessarily, you know, shying away from superhero, you know,
mm-hmm.
comic books because obviously, you know, a lot of us grew up reading them and
right,
I did.
Right.
But we also decided that aside from the fact that the whole tights concept is a bit ridiculous on some level,
mm-hmm.
you know, it's also just being done by all the major comic book companies
mm-hmm.
and we felt like we couldn't really, you know, to go head to head against Spider-Man and Superman was probably
sure.
suicide.
Sure.
So our idea was to create characters that appeal to sort of a crosshatch of the indie comic book reader who
mm-hmm.
also likes the superhero comics but doesn't want to read Spider-Man and all that kind of
right,
stuff.
Right,
so.
Right. So your characters might have powers but
exactly.
might not be costumed heroes
exactly,
in that point.
Exactly. That's exactly right.
Okay, cool. How long have you been doing it these days?
Well, I mean, I've always been creating comics
uh-huh.
ever since I was a kid and, you know, in the late 70s, but we started the company in 2005,
mm-hmm.
and, you know, we started with a character called Nightwolf, which I didn't bring you right now because we did that through Devil's Due.
Okay.
And Nightwolf was actually really successful. It was optioned by Fox for a TV pilot.
Oh, great.
We will be publishing Nightwolf through our imprint,
uh-huh.
but not probably until late summer or early fall. That kind of spurred us on. Then we did the Arcadian comic.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that was very well received. And, you know, so we just decided to move into doing, you know, more titles and expanding as fast as we can while somehow remaining solvent, you know. And
Well, you mentioned to me when you came up here that that it is definitely science fiction based.
Some of it is.
Okay, some of it is.
A lot of it's horror. Like, Arcadian is actually a supernatural assassin.
Okay. Okay.
Zombies in Love is obviously zombies.
Uh-huh.
Herc Brown is based on mythology.
Right, right.
So we've got a lot of that. Bloodlines is actually more of a science fiction title.
Oh, cool. Okay.
We have a couple of other science fiction titles coming out as well. So we're actually moving more towards science fiction because my personal belief is that fantasy in the is sort of king right now in Hollywood and literature. You know, comics, superheroes is still the king. But I think science fiction is, about to make a big comeback.
Okay.
In the popular literature and in movies, and I think in comics as well.
Is it just that one leads to the other?
I don't know. Maybe. Mm-hmm. It's hard to say with so many individual projects that are out there that start off in different venues, So something that starts as a movie can become a very popular comic book, and it happens all the time. Science fiction has never really taken off in comics quite to the same level. There are obviously characters that are science fictional based.
Sure, sure.
Like the Fantastic Four and the Hulk and things like that. But they're superheroes, whereas, I think science fiction, is gonna can do the same thing that, fantasy is doing and become, huge to the point where it's increasing the audience size for everybody.
Well, it's funny. It's like you have the comic book movies, which are becoming popular. You've got the horror movies that are also oftentimes go into the sci-fi genre. So
right.
I guess it would make sense for straight sci-fi to start being popular again.
Yeah, and I think it will. I think, there was a little bump with the Star Wars movies, which, were popular and helped, increase things. But really, it's been fantasy. Harry Potter, Lord of the Rings, fantasy has basically taken over.
Sure, sure.
Superheroes have been doing great, obviously, manga-style, stories are obviously very popular. And these things have all, I think, added to, the audience that is now available to the comic book industry in general.
Right.
And, somebody reads Harry Potter, they love it, they get older, they want some more, they go to a convention, they see some comics, some manga. I think it's all the same to most people.
Right.
And it is to me. So I like it all.
It's almost like if you give them one thing, like, for instance, if you give them, like, a sci-fi show, like, say, like, for instance, like Buffy the Vampire Slayer, and now the way to Buffy the Vampire Slayer is now a very popular comic book.
Right.
Obviously, that's going to open up the door for people to perhaps find other comic books they're interested in, whether it be in that genre or in other genres, and go from there.
Exactly, exactly. I mean, it's a great thing because it feeds off the different media feed off of each other.
Mm-hmm.
So something starts as a movie, becomes a hit TV series, becomes a hit comic book.
Right.
Something starts as a comic book, becomes a hit movie, becomes a hit cartoon.
Mm-hmm.
Boost sales of the comic book. I mean, it's great, and to see, the industry now, and to have seen it back in the mid-90s when it was in the dumps.
Yeah.
And, people thought, the comic book industry going to survive?
Mm-hmm.
What's going to happen? Science fiction writers and publishers were all bemoaning the fact that the audience was getting older and older and older.
Mm-hmm.
Now, there are a lot of young people, a lot of teenagers, and a lot of kids running around. And they're our audience. They're our future audience for a long time to come. And they're rabid fans. They're spending money. They're buying the stuff that they love. And there's more of them than there ever were.
Sure, sure.
So I think we're in boom times, in this business.
Well, I certainly hope so.
Yeah.
Because that would make everybody's life as comic book fans a little easier to have more people out there to relate to.
And I think it'll last because we've got... It's young people that are in it again.
Yeah.
Kids. So they're going to keep... I was reading comics when I was a kid. This is back in the 70s. Here it is 30 years later.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm still reading comics and I'm still doing what I always wanted to do.
Hey.
It's hard to let go. And I think a lot of... Maybe not every fan does that, but I think a lot of them do. And they are... nobody's as loyal as a fan. A Star Trek fan is a Star Trek fan until the day he dies.
Yeah. Yeah, and a comic book fan is a comic book fan until the day they die. It's the way it goes.
So when you have them, they're yours.
Yeah.
Yours to lose.
No question about it. Tell us a little bit about the short story collection real quick here.
Yeah, I started off writing science fiction and short fiction and sold my first story in 1990. And I have a collection called Daydreams Undertaken.
Okay.
It was published by a small press called Marietta Publishing out of the Atlanta area. It is actually going to be published, republished, I should say, reissued by a Canadian publisher called Edge Science Fiction.
Mm-hmm.
And that will, I think, will widen the audience for it because Marietta Publishing, the owner of that company, is a great publisher.
Mm-hmm.
But it was a print-on-demand book, which made it difficult to get it into stores.
Right.
So now Edge wants to do it, and it's more traditional publishing.
Great.
So it has a better chance of getting into stores. One of the short stories in that collection we are adapting into a graphic novel.
Okay.
It's fantasy.
Mm-hmm.
Another is a vampire virtual reality story that I adapted into a screenplay,
mm-hmm.
and we almost got financed and didn't quite make it.
Yeah.
You know, everything I do now is geared towards maximizing the potential in other media. So I write a short story. I mean, I don't necessarily write a short story thinking it'll be a movie someday or a mm-hmm. comic book, but I always am in the back of my head wondering, what of my own material can I mine to reuse?
Yep.
And Arcadian's a perfect example of that.
Mm-hmm.
Wrote it as a short film. Made it with the singer-songwriter Sean Mullins, was one of the characters in it. Then took that short film. We turned it into a feature film.
Great.
Shot it with Corey Feldman
uh-huh.
and Jeff Fahey
mm-hmm.
in Atlanta. That actually came out on DVD, straight to DVD. You know,
uh-huh.
it's a watchable movie.
Right, right. Okay. not like some of the other ones out
exactly,
there.
Exactly, exactly. Yeah. And then I adapted those two into a short story,
uh-huh.
wrote that short story. That was actually published by an Indian website, which was kind of strange.
Okay.
And then we took the short story, the feature film, and the short film and
mm-hmm.
turn that into this comic book.
Wow.
And now this comic book has been optioned by a feature film company.
so it all goes full circle.
Based out of Hong Kong. So,
wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
And they want to shoot it in Hong Kong, which I would love. Because I love
sure.
Hong Kong movies.
So. Yeah.
So yeah, exactly. It goes full circle. And, you know, that's what I like to see. I like to see something that's obviously got some merit to it,
mm-hmm.
you know, that can be exploited in that way. And exploited in the good word.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Not in a bad way.
Right.
So,
do you have a website that anybody could go to?
VLEComics.com.
VLEComics.com. Okay.
It's up now. It's being completely renovated, though.
Uh-huh.
So it will be, we're going to actually set it up so that retailers can order directly from us.
Uh-huh.
That kind of thing.
Great. But, terrific.
Yeah.
Well, I'm certainly interested, and you'll probably be hearing more about this on Comic Timing as I'll be reading through these as the next weeks go on. But definitely great to join us for a little bit here, Steve.
Yeah, appreciate it. Thanks.
All right, great. And more to come here at New York Comic Con.
Cool.
Okay, here we go with the other half of the bunch here. We're here with James Bassett, and he's got himself a couple books as well. So why don't you explain to the folks out there what they are?
Okay, debuting here at Comic-Con, there is Bloodlines.
Mm-hmm.
First series is Taina, the Hunter Bloodline. Various families that are the pinnacle of human evolution.
Mm-hmm.
Excellent genes, they live longer, they're smarter, they're faster, they're stronger. There are internecine issues among the families.
Mm-hmm.
Some want to exert control over humanity,
mm-hmm.
some want to stop them from doing that. And each series will follow a different character from a different bloodline.
Great.
In the unfolding war. Then there is Eve L,
mm-hmm.
who is a reluctant vigilante.
Okay.
Amoral character, out for herself,
mm-hmm.
and basically, against her will, ends up defending the downtrodden.
Okay.
And
whether she likes it or not.
Whether she likes it or not, and over the course of the series, sort of rediscovers her own lost humanity.
Okay. Now,
basically, a hot chick who kicks ass. That's all you really need to
that's
know.
That's all anybody ever really needs to know, right? Now, these powers, you said that they come from the genes themselves. So is it more like a mutation or just powers that are, like, inherited?
In Bloodlines, it's primarily inheritance.
Okay.
Just good breeding.
Mm-hmm.
Over, you know, centuries or millennia.
Gotcha, gotcha.
Certain families have just done very, very well. And there are, you know, some pseudo-scientific powers as well that
okay.
show up. You know, ability to influence others.
Right.
Just, you know, look at Martin Luther King or Hitler.
Mm-hmm.
You know, for good or ill, that
right.
they both had enormous sway over people.
It's the never-ending struggle right there between
Absolutely.
Good and evil. So somebody might have good intentions to themselves, however, ending up ruining things in the ends for others.
The primary inheritance of the families is the mm-hmm. actual genes.
Okay.
So whatever wars they have going on
mm-hmm.
Amongst one another, their primary law has always been that they will not kill
okay.
another of the bloodlines.
Okay.
Because to avoid mutations,
right.
they all interbreed. But as the series begins, things are getting out of hand, and there are some people who just decide that, that things need to change, and they will do whatever is necessary.
Including killing?
Is necessary.
Okay, right. Tell us a little bit about Living Real here.
Living Real is a science fiction novel that I wrote about 10 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
It was published by Harper Prism, and there's a new edition out from Marietta Publishing.
Mm-hmm.
It's a post-cyberpunk novel, a virtual reality system, where one of the programmers, one of the developers of the virtual entertainments,
mm-hmm.
Discovers a way to basically hack into the machine code so that he ends up being able to not just program realities within the system, but he can actually directly interact with the user's brain.
Oh, wow.
And directly reprogram the neural connections in a user's brain.
So a little bit of a neuromancer type situation, I guess.
Kind of, yeah.
Yeah.
And, you know, the government gets involved in it, and corporations want to steal the technology and make it their own.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, hilarity ensues.
Right. Right. What are your basic influences when it comes to your writing? I mean, obviously, you're a sci-fi fan from the way you're describing things, but what'd you read growing up?
Growing up, I read a lot of science fiction.
Mm-hmm.
As a real little kid, I read all the Hardy Boys books and Tom Swift books.
Sure, yeah.
As far as comics, I got into those when I was growing up in Indonesia. So I'm primarily have come at it from a background of things like Tintin and Asterisk.
Mm-hmm.
And the European comics. I didn't really get into American-style comics until I was in college.
And if you could use one line to describe your current comic work, what would it be?
Story-oriented.
Okay.
I think comes partly from the, like I said, the European comics that
right.
I grew up reading. Much more, you know, not focused on superpowers and the big battles between the heroes and the villains, but uh-huh. developing a story over time.
Right. As opposed to giving it all at once, it's a slow trickle, as it were.
Right, and certainly, you know, American-style comics, there are great stories.
Oh, sure, yeah.
But it's much more visceral, immediate action-oriented, and
More direct.
Right, and the stories I'm telling in Bloodlines and mm-hmm. Evel are more slow developing over time.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of thing. So
great. You want to give the website one more time out there? I know that your partner gave it as well, but let's get it one more time out there.
Oh, you can always have more advertising. It's www.vlecomics.com.
All right, great. Well, James Bassett, thanks for joining us.
Thank you very much.
All right. More from Comic-Con as time goes on, as you very well know because you're listening to it right now.
Who's that?
All right, back here at New York Comic Con, and I'm here with the creative force behind Air Force. Everybody introduce themselves.
Hi, my name is Sean Martinborough. I'm the artist of Air Force.
Adam Slutsky, I'm one of the writers on the project.
And Joe Illich, I'm one of the writers and creators as well. It's good to be here.
Good to have you guys on. Now, explain a little bit about Air Force to the folks out there.
Okay, I'm going to let Adam take this first because it centers around the entertainment company Bodog,
mm-hmm.
and Adam is the one that kind of brought the idea to Bodog, so
okay,
I'll
great.
Give it to him.
Excellent.
For those of you who don't know, Bodog is a major online conglomerate, or I should say a multimedia conglomerate, centers around Calvin Ayer.
Mm-hmm.
It's a self-made billionaire playboy.
Mm-hmm.
It's got a life that most of us dream about. And still
a real life Tony Stark?
Yeah, basically, except without the weapons.
Yes,
yeah,
thank you. I was just about to say.
No, Calvin's a self-made man. He's really got a great story, and he represents online entertainment in terms of sports gambling and poker.
Mm-hmm.
That's Bodog Poker, or you'll find it under BodogLife.com.
Right.
Then he also has Bodog Fight, which is hot in the mixed martial arts these days. I'm sure you've probably heard about it. Got some big names.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's Bodog Music
uh-huh.
with Nazanin, Jason Darr from the band Neurosonic,
mm-hmm.
Biff Naked. So what this is a real-life clandestine spec ops team
uh-huh.
that may or may not exist, and I want to stress that.
Okay.
Because, you know, there's a thing about hiding in plain sight. So, you know, I wouldn't recommend going up to Calvin and say, hey, what's your next adventure? Or, hey, that's not, you didn't really do that. Because the bottom line is, here's a guy, this benevolent, serious billionaire who's got a lot of money, decides to, you know, fight the forces of evil.
Uh-huh.
And what better way to do that than to create your own dream team in the clandestine world.
Hell, there you go.
There it is. So yeah. He recruits the people that he needs, the resident badasses from music, from mixed martial arts, and from the gambling world. And together they go out, and obviously you can't have a hero without a villain. And for the villain, we have a gentleman named Janis Winter, who is one of the coolest villains I have personally heard about. I've never encountered him, thank God. but Joe could probably tell you more about that. So they, you know, you have diametrically opposed forces, a yin and a yang. You can't have one without the other. And it's just a great adventure. And, you know, all the proceeds going to charity, to the Calvin Air Foundation as well. So it's really sick.
Yeah. The concept itself, it sort of sounds like to me, you know the television show The Unit on CBS? It's almost as if The Unit were celebrities.
That's a pretty good. Go ahead. That's a pretty good analogy.
Yeah, that's pretty good. I'll take that as a compliment because Sean Ryan, who's one of the creators of The Unit, I'm a big fan of his. I love The Shield. Like, basically, when we came up with the idea, the two things that I think was very important to us is, one, that it be grounded.
Right.
Like, no one got rocketed from the planet Krypton. No one has capes. You know what I mean?
Are anybody's parents dead? Because
No. Everyone's parents are alive.
Good.
Everyone's,
okay. All right.
Their spouses are alive.
That's good to hear.
Their kids didn't get killed in a park or nothing. That's true. That's true. So it being grounded was important. So we said, okay, it has to be in the techno thriller genre, like in the spirit of Tom Clancy's Rainbow Six and G.I. Joe. And then the second thing is that you had to develop a universe, a mythos around it.
Okay.
Because, you know, people hear it's a Bodog project and you're going to instantly think, oh, this is just like one big ad.
Sure.
And we decided we had to give you a story. So, you know, one of the things that Sean always says to me, he and I have known each other for years, and it's a fact in fiction, is that your villain has to be cooler than your hero. So we had to really come up with villainy that is the opposite of Calvin and his team.
Right,
and
right.
One of the things that Calvin Air in real life is interested in is science, and I think one of the great villainies of our time is basically the crimes that the pharmaceutical industry are perpetrating on, you know, like the global public,
sure.
Which is why I'm not going to try to apply for any jobs at Pfizer, because I basically just well, killed my chances of any jobs at Pfizer, Merck, with Vitoxin. And so we came up with a family. Janis Winter, as Adam pointed out, is the corporate magnate, and his children are genetically engineered. And so they have powers that, if you take things one step further, it is possible. But again, we're not talking like Superman.
Sure,
no one
sure.
can jump off a building or anything like that.
Right.
So that was basically our take on it when we were creating the fictional world of Air Force.
So in other words, they're making powerful people, but not uber powerful, like not the type that could just like break through a tank in like 5 seconds.
Exactly. It's not like that, and you know, it's definitely based in like eugenics, and I think it's really like one step further than something you would read in Scientific American.
Okay.
And they're a family, so you're basically talking about a guy and his children, which offers a different dynamic than Calvin and his team.
Right.
So we basically tried to come up with something that were two opposing concepts, you know, butting heads with each other in this, you know, world that we live in.
Right, right. Well, let's talk a little bit about the art for a minute, because he's been waiting here nice and patiently.
All right. So we pass it over to Sean.
Yes, indeed.
Talk about the artwork.
Oh, yeah. Well, actually, my first question for you is how difficult is it to work with artwork where, you know, you're obviously basing it on real people? So you got to go, I guess, maybe for a little bit of photo reference there.
Yeah, I mean, it can be tricky, but I think, fortunately, we really didn't have a problem in terms of getting approval on likenesses. There might have been maybe one or two characters, because I think ultimately I designed looks for about 10 real characters, and then Janis Winter and the Winter Children were, I could create that from the ground up.
Right.
But I think for the most part, other than maybe one or two of the real life characters that wanted some revisions, wanted some tweaks to their likeness, it was pretty easy. I mean, I think probably Calvin Air was the easiest one. Calvin had no problems with how I depicted him.
Great.
So,
well, now, how many of your like drawing fantasies are you living out now? Like, okay, now I get to have like an explosion here, you know, and like I get to have them jump off a building here.
It was great because, you know, what makes this different than working for Marvel or DC Comics is that we had a wide berth to create whatever we wanted.
Mm-hmm.
So basically, since the three of us came up with the story, and we just could create any scenario that we wanted within reason. So to be able to design an action sequence from the ground up, you know, I mean, that's, you just can't beat that.
Right.
So, I mean, it was just really a challenge just to make it look interesting, make it look pretty realistic. And, you know, I mean, that it was just, I live for that kind of challenge in terms of the artwork.
Now, is this your, is this all you, or are you the colorist also? Or
No. I just did the pencil and the
okay.
inks.
Okay, so, gotcha, yeah. gotcha. Mm-hmm. And actually, how different is it for you working with your own inks versus someone else inking you?
Total control.
Total control.
Yeah, I mean, okay. total control. I've been inking myself for years now. And, you know, for the most part, like, you cannot beat the total control you have in just, you know, doing an image from the pencil and then just adding the blacks and adding, you know, dark and light and really just making the making it look exactly the way you want to look.
Right.
You just can't beat it.
And, right.
But the interesting thing is that, you know, I put out an art book that really just shows my artwork in its purest form, mm-hmm. which is just all black and white. It's called How to Draw Noir.
Uh-huh.
And what was interesting with this project is that this project was going to be totally in color.
Okay.
And so when I was working with the colorists on this, I said, listen, I know that my work is primarily known for being very noirish, very dark and light, mm-hmm. but ultimately this is a color book. So I said, in this situation, color trumps black and white. My black and white will shine through, but if you want to do a color effect, a visual effect, knock something into a blur,
yeah.
go ahead.
Right, right. And that just really just enhances the artwork in
totally.
The end. Yeah.
Totally.
And also, I assume that you get to work with a lot of real-life buildings also, since you're not really dealing with a fantasy world here.
In terms of, you said buildings?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I mean, in terms of architecture, I like, you know, when it came time to design Janice's house, his war room, different things, I would just go through different architecture books that I have in my library uh-huh. and just kind of come up with a scheme
right.
for him. In terms of, like, Janice's look, all the costuming is kind of built on, you know, like a real world sensibility. Mm-hmm. I bought fashion magazines, court, fashion couture, really kind of using that as like a launching pad for Janice's children, Helena and Ashley. They have kind of distinctive styles. So,
mm-hmm.
yeah.
Great. Awesome. Yeah. Let's go back into the writing a little bit. Is there, in general, like, is it more a team aspect than one character over another you're dealing with here? Or
that's a good question. For me, it was a totally unique experience. I mean, I mm-hmm. coming into this project, I knew less than nothing about the whole graphic novel
okay.
comic arena. And I need to, you know, make that very clear. I found Sean on the basis of his new book that has come out, How to Draw Noir.
Okay.
And, you know, this whole thing, the way it conceptualized and seeing it now is beyond, has far exceeded my expectations. Like, the example I give is, you know, what I originally envisioned was a vitamin C tablet,
uh-huh.
and now it's a full-blown, you know, Dianabol steroid injection. I mean, and that's legitimate.
Barry Bonds, run!
Yeah, seriously. Oh, run far and fast. No, I mean, and in terms of writing it, you know, and Joe really opened up my eyes to, you know, not just what could be done with the medium of a graphic novel,
mm-hmm.
but the way the story interplays. I came from more of a hardcore writing, you know, really funky articles
uh-huh.
and a screenwriting background
uh-huh.
With a strange weaponry, strange, you know, nice kid plays with guns growing up kind of deal.
Mm-hmm.
And Joe, with his years of experience and wealth of crafting stories and crafting amazing characters in terms of villains and heroes that can, you know, interplay off one another, when we started writing the story, I mean, I think we fed off one another and really took things to different levels. And I know, you know, once I saw work of his that Sean introduced me to, mm-hmm. I was blown away. I was a fan, and where the story went, I couldn't wait to see more and where it was going to go each time.
Right.
So for me as a writer, I became a fan of my own work and a work that I was also involved in.
Mm-hmm.
And then when Sean got a hold of the artwork, it was like, get out. It was just insane. But I'll pass it over to Joe too, because you know, again, I became a fan instantly.
Yeah, to go what you were saying about the characters and like to back Adam up, like, Adam really knows, like, the military stuff, so that helped us bring some kind of plausible, like, verisimilitude to Air Force.
Mm-hmm.
So when I really thought about them, you know, it was like, okay, these guys are a military unit, which means they all have distinctive personalities based off of the real people, but when they work together, they're on.
Okay.
They're on. So when the book begins, you get to see them on.
Uh-huh.
And usually, I think what helps make a good dramatic story is when you see the perfect team get what rating is this show? Is it PG-13?
This is fucking R.
Cool.
Here.
When
so
you
don't worry
see
about
the
it.
Perfect team get fucked up, right? So when you have like the like 10-part story where the Masters of Evil like take over Avengers Mansion and fuck everyone up and
uh-huh.
the Avengers have to come back, like that's how you do it. So we said, okay, we have to show Air Force on point, and then the villains come and totally scatter them to the four winds.
Uh-huh.
and then we show, okay, you got to show them rebuild, you have to recruit new members.
Right.
So to answer your original question, no one character is more important. All mm-hmm. characters are equally important. They all get their stage time. But what was important is creating a threat, creating realized villains.
Okay.
Because at least with Calvin Air and Air Force, they're all real people, and you can say, okay, this is what David Williams is like. I can extrapolate on
sure,
that.
Sure, sure.
Uh-huh. But when we had to come up with Janice Winter and the children, funny enough, that offered us more freedom, but it was also a greater creative burden.
Well, yeah, because you're dealing with blank slates as opposed to real people.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. So for us, all of the characters were equally important in every stage of the game, from the outlines to the design to the looks.
Mm-hmm. Now, is this the first time you two have collaborated? Or
yeah, this is me okay. and Adam's first time, and hopefully, you know, it'll be the first of quite a few more, because we just, you know, we just really have a just like a good working vibe. And uh-huh. again, you know, like his military knowledge, his understanding of tactics and weapons, and then me kind of bringing in, you know, my sense of story structure
sure.
and just like ideas about character. It really made. Like, the three of us really made something. It's a whole that's greater than the sum of its parts.
And how different is it to work with a co-writer as opposed to writing something entirely yourself?
Well, first thing is, like, you have to know, to some degree, how to put just a little bit of your ego in the box. Like, that's the first thing. Like, what you have to do is, instead of saying, okay, this is my idea,
uh-huh.
conform your idea to my idea, I think you just have to throw everything on the table
sure.
and see what works.
Uh-huh.
And then you do eventually hit this point where you're literally platforming off of each other. And, like, with Adam and I, we can't look at the script. We can't look at the book and say, like, that's where I end and you begin
yeah.
or something like that. And that's not what it's about. It's about synergy. Like, one of my favorite books out there is The Immortal Iron Fist by Matt Fraction and mm-hmm. Ed Brubaker.
Yeah.
You can't tell where one person begins and the other person
oh, yeah.
ends.
Yeah.
And you know what? That's proper, because the most important thing is story.
Like 52 also. 52 was a great example
exactly.
where you had four different people in there bringing their ideas together and making it gel.
Exactly right. So we looked at it from that point of view where it was about creative synergy, and mm-hmm. the most important thing was the work. The most important thing was not, you know, us showcasing ourselves.
Okay.
That's not what it's about.
Now, I mean, we definitely stepped on each other's toes a little bit, too, but, you know, to trade off, Joe's sleeping with my sister next week, and that's gonna make it a little better.
Which is why, after I leave here, I'm going to buy myself the best pack of condoms I can find.
Oh,
because I don't want to impregnate uh-huh. her, because if I impregnate
right,
Adam's
right.
sister, Adam is going to come after
it's
me
gonna go to
with
hell.
One of his guns. He's going to kill me. There goes the possibility uh-huh. of the Air Force
he's
sequel, and it
yeah, there you
all
go.
Messes up.
Actually, I'll be excited,
because then I'll know. All messes up. I am all for responsible sex. Okay?
That is what this show is all about. I forget what this show is about now. So, actually, what do you say to people who immediately see, oh, well, you know, this is about real people. It must just be like a promotional stunt or something like that. What do you say to people who say that?
Actually, I'd like to take that. First of all, the cool thing about this is, I mean, a lot of people don't know Calvin in general, Calvin Air
uh-huh.
of Bodog. And the guy is, you know, yeah, he's a billionaire playboy, but he's one of the most benevolent individuals on the planet.
Uh-huh.
I mean, the guy is donating a lot of money and a lot of time when he could be, you know, pulling a Joe Francis from Girls Gone Wild,
sure.
just going out and getting arrested and having a good time and partying on an island. Calvin's, you know, he's made a lot of money, and yeah, he plays hard, but he's also doing a lot of really good things for a lot of people.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he's hugely responsible about the environment, very big on animal rights, as of some of the adventures in the book that I won't get into. I want you
yeah.
to buy it, obviously. And also, you know, children's, you know, underprivileged children's education. So this is a responsible guy. So in terms of a PR stunt, I think you could say that anything is a PR stunt, whether it showcases the parties involved in it or
mm-hmm.
the group that it's telling the story about.
Right.
But it's also, you know, like Joe said, it's telling a great story, something that really gives you a bang for your buck, and, you know, you can lose yourself in a fantasy world.
Mm-hmm.
But it's also, you know, socially responsible in that the book is all green, which was news to me. I didn't even know you could do
wow.
that.
Wow.
Yeah, it's all
holy
green.
Crap.
And all the proceeds are going to charity, to the Calvin Air Foundation,
well,
which, you know,
yeah.
you can see at bodoglife.com or Calvin Air Foundation. Just, you know, if you don't know where that is, just, you know, do a general search. I mean, this is a team of people and a good guy
yeah.
doing a lot of really good things for people or animals or an environment that really can't
yeah.
take care of itself.
See, that's almost unheard of to me. I mean, donating all of the proceeds entirely.
I was shocked when I saw that. But,
yeah.
you know, again, you're dealing with a company that's made such an imprint on the poker world, the gaming
uh-huh.
world, on the music world and mixed martial arts.
Right.
And to bring it all together, to go into this and really, you know, put your foot and your fist forward
mm-hmm.
and your checkbook, too. That's pretty impressive.
Yeah. Now, I actually got something in my email box right before I came here about an animated series. Now,
those are probably the webisodes, and okay. I'm going to let Joe or Sean take that because, okay. I mean, that was news to me
right.
as well, and I'm new to this world.
Okay.
Yeah, I think when we were sitting down and working on the marketing for the book, we really suggested to Bodog that they use the internet to their advantage to promote the book. Mm-hmm. And since, you know, I know that Joe and I are huge fans of like The Matrix, what they did with like
right,
their animated
right.
the Animatrix series. We said, hey, why don't we do something that would set up the events that would happen in the graphic novel? Because even though we had 80 pages, we had a lot of story to and a lot of characters and a lot of stuff that could really benefit from being spelled out a little bit more. So we kind of sat down and looked at the webisodes and said, okay, since there are one and two of them,
uh-huh.
since there are two webisodes, why don't we try to see like what can we develop in those webisodes that would help people understand the graphic novel
sure.
better?
Sure. Is this just flash based stuff or?
It's flash animated stuff.
Okay.
And Joe and I have a production company called Verge Entertainment. That we actually produced the webisodes, and the three of us worked on the concept for like the storyline, and then our company actually animated the episodes and produced them.
Great, awesome.
Yeah. You guys are being modest too. I saw the webisodes for the first time when I got here, and I was absolutely, like I said, I became a fan of something I was involved in. I was blown away.
Wow.
So it was, yeah, it's sick. It's really, really cool.
Well, you're certainly making me want to check them out.
Get over there, dude. In fact, we're going to escort you when we're done with this thing. No, it's awesome.
Yep, if you want to go check them out, the website address is Air Force, A-Y-R-E, Force, dot, BodogLife.com,
okay.
I believe it is, or it's airforce.com/BodogLife.com. I get so
yeah.
confused with these URLs.
It's probably airforce.BodogLife.com.
Yeah. And what's
yeah.
cool is that the webisodes are prequels to the graphic novel.
Oh, great.
So you can read the book in and of itself, but if you see the webisodes, you'll just have a bigger picture
uh-huh.
than a lot of other people. So, you know, it's a bit more bang. It's more story than we could all provide for the buyers.
Great. Well, I mean, from the preview I read before I came here, I was heavily impressed. And I certainly am waiting to read more. So I'm probably going to tackle this the minute I get home tonight. But anyway.
All right. We appreciate it.
Yeah. And so that's the main website for everything that you just mentioned?
Actually, if you go to BodogLife.com,
okay.
that's the entirety of Bodog.
Right.
And you'll find everything, including a window to take you to the Air Force website.
Gotcha. And do you guys have your own personal websites you want to plug real quickly? Or?
Well, Sean and I, again, we have a film production company called Verge Entertainment,
uh-huh.
and the URL for that is www.verge.tv.
Uh-huh.
And so that's basically us. And then Sean's put out his book, How to Draw Noir Comics, so
mm-hmm.
why don't you give the URL for that?
Yeah, actually, we filmed a commercial for the art book. It's an art instruction book called How to Draw Noir Comics, The Art and Technique of Visual Storytelling,
mm-hmm.
and you can actually check that out at myspace.com/noircomics.
Great. Excellent. Well, guys, I definitely want to thank you guys for the interview here. It's been a lot of fun, and hell, you just gained a fan.
Thanks so much, man. We really appreciate it.
Appreciate you having us, man. Thank you very much.
Yeah, definitely.
Thanks very much, and remember what I said, responsible sex.
Yes, yes, yes.
That is the note on which to end this interview.
Yes, and also, Pfizer is the devil.
Entirely possible.
All right, we'll be back here with more from the con later on, and more comic timing to come. All right, folks, we're here at day two of New York Comic Con, and, well, we got ourselves a nice shiny cover here. I can definitely say that for United Free Worlds. Why don't you introduce yourself to the folks out there?
Hello, I'm Blake Leibel, the creator of United Free Worlds.
So tell us a little bit about the book.
The book is about an intergalactic war between man's finest armies and soldiers against a planet of people who are 12 to 18 feet tall who ride and control dinosaurs like dogs.
Now, see, that in and of itself sounds like something I'd be interested in. How'd you come up with the concept?
I always wanted to see what it would look like if a man could ride a dinosaur, and I always wondered that if there were people around when dinosaurs were around, maybe we rode a few of them or took one to the store at the time, and then it made me think, what would it be like if we evolved with dinosaurs but our technology never evolved? Would we have a nice rapport with them like we do with dogs? And then from that, it just turned into an all-out Royal Rumble that also talks a lot about how there's always someone bigger and larger in life and in the cosmos, and it's probably best to get along with everybody and combine the best resources and the best of what we have to work together.
So it's a good old-fashioned alternate reality story.
Yeah. And the thing that makes it really great is the hyper-stylized action. One character, for example, named Max Tor, who's on the Kratorian side, he's shot by a tank, and he flies through the air, and he lands inside a dead Brontosaurus's stomach. He pulls himself out from the Brontosaurus, takes a piece of armor off the dead Brontosaurus, and starts clubbing 20 Hummers at a time. Some of them get impaled by this piece of armor, and when he's done his madness, he stabs the piece of armor into the ground with all the Hummers in it, like a proud warrior. And I'm really looking forward to seeing an 18-foot man standing next to a 25-foot pole filled with Hummers. He's just like, what? So that's I love that, and I love action.
Well, you're certainly far from the only one right there. So you've had some work on the Spaceball series for G4 as well?
Yes, we Quick Draw Cowboys, this production company that we started and we're part of, does all the designs and all the backgrounds for Spaceballs, and Jason Raines, Michael Montaigne, and myself, separately and together, direct episodes. I did one this year called Grand Theft Starship, which is a spoof on Grand Theft Auto, where Lone Star and Vespa get trapped in the video game world and have to fight for their way out. A lot of death in that thing, too. And it's just looking like a great one. Jason Raines, the artist from this, with Michael Montaigne, they directed the pilot, an episode called Scroobinator, which is a spoof on the Terminator, and as well as the three of us, we're going to be doing the Spider-Mog episode together. So it's been a really great year.
Now, how much of an input does Mel Brooks actually have with the project?
Mel Brooks has entire input, 100%, from designs to voice recording. There is not one aspect of that show that he is not in charge of and does not oversee. It's been the biggest honor and such a wonderful moment getting to spend time with him, even seeing him when he gives you a note or he tells you that he likes something or dislikes something. What a rush. What a wonderful man. And we're all just so lucky just to be around him. That's one thing that everyone on the crew just feels so lucky to be around Mel Brooks.
Well, I can imagine. I mean, he's had years and years of experience to deal with it.
Yeah, he's probably the funniest man alive. You could say that easily. And he can sing, and he comes up with lines on the spot. He's just it's his show. There's no way of getting around it. It's one man's vision. It's one man's pot.
Excellent. You have a website out there?
Yeah, it's fantasyprone.com. That's fantasyprone.com. And if you're wondering where the name originates from, fantasy prone is a psychological state of being where you can hallucinate while you're awake. And most of the people at our company suffer from this.
And that would explain how you get to men riding dinosaurs.
Absolutely, because we can see them real clearly. It's no different than a man riding a horse, but it's a dinosaur.
Excellent. All right, well, thanks for joining me, man.
Thank you very much, brother.
All right, more here from New York Comic Con as time goes on. Day two, still day two here at New York Comic Con, and I'm here with...
Travis Johnson.
Now you were telling me about your sci-fi prose you have going on. Why don't you tell the listeners about it?
Sure. I have started a site called Variance Press. Basically, what we've got on the site is science fiction, fantasy, and horror, comics, prose. We're trying to get poetry, art, basically any part, any medium that you can tell a story, like genre fiction story, we want to put on the site.
Excellent. And you said that it goes online first and then into publication afterwards?
Exactly. Okay. Try and go for weekly or biweekly. We'll do an update on the site with maybe four or five new stories. And then every 6 months, we'll take what we've got on the site, compile it into an anthology, and for your bookshelf, and go through print on demand. And you can buy a hard copy of the book.
Oh, wow.
It'll never go out of print because it's online.
Great, excellent. What sort of guys have you had involved with the project before?
In the first week's release, we've got Kieran Gillen, who you might know from Image Comics' Phonogram.
Right, right.
And Alex DeCampi, mm-hmm. who you also may know from IDW Smoke, and a few... Tokyopop books, mm-hmm. and in the upcoming weeks, we've got, in the first week, we've also got Sam Hart, who's doing the art for Starship Troopers for Marcosia, mm-hmm. and some European guys. We're really excited about the lineup we've got.
Now, is this all mature content, or is this for all ages?
It's basically all ages. You know, I don't want to limit the audience. I'd like it's adult in so much as it's intelligent storytelling,
right,
but
right,
not
right.
adult as far as, you know... X-rated content.
So something that could be shared with the kids, but nothing that's too severe.
I'm hoping it's for kids. Really, the whole point, the subtitle on our site is Let Your Mind Wander, mm-hmm. and really what we're trying to do is like unlock that part of all of us
right.
that you know, stares out the window and imagines what if.
Definitely, definitely. You want to give the website out there for everybody?
Great, sure. It's www.variancepress, that's VARIANCEPRESS.com.
Excellent, and like you said, it's weekly, so just check it out every single week, get a brand new thing.
Great, thank you very much for having me.
All right, no problem, and more from Comic-Con to come. Yeah, so what a shock, we're back here at New York Comic-Con for the first time this time around. It's Juan. What's up, Juan?
My voice is going.
Going, gone. You're like an Alex Rodriguez home run.
No, Yankees win.
Anyway, Chris has a story to tell. You met her for 5 seconds last year with her Ghost of Comics Past.
I don't have a story to tell. You're just making me do this.
You just tell it.
So I'm going to tell Juan because that's personal. Mike just, you know, Ian just happened to put a mic here. So,
that's,
you know,
that's a disclaimer right there.
Yeah, this is eavesdropping, man. This is wiretap. This is so illegal.
Listening devices.
Yeah.
All right, so
what's
up?
Yeah, you know, last night, the whole group of us decided to go out to eat. Us being all of the podcast network people here in Podcast Alley, whatever. And so we're at the New Yorker Hotel, and we're just sitting around, and we have no idea where we're going to eat. And we're like, hey, let's go to the TikTok Diner. But the Brits over there, what podcast is that anyway? The
Birds of Geek?
Birds of Geek, yeah. I'm like, no, we've already been to the TikTok Diner like 3 times. And I'm like, well, there's nothing in this neighborhood except for diners. Mm-hmm. And I don't want to go to diners. I'm sick of diners, you know. And she's like, oh, obviously you've never been to Britain because, uh-huh. you know, all food sucks in Britain. I'm like, okay, whatever. I'm talking to Ian, and I got this great idea. Hey, I'm really in the mood for those crab cream croquettes at Village Yokocho, which is this place on 9th Stuyvesant Street. It's like a whole bunch of Japanese restaurants.
The wrong way down.
Yeah, but come on, it's worth it. These things are divine. They are like the best things ever. They also have okonomiyaki, Japanese pizza, Japanese pancake, whatever you want to call it. You've ever had that?
Yeah.
It's great. There, they, of course, put the bonito flakes, so when the steam comes up, it makes them twitch, so it looks like the food's moving. Uh-huh. Awesome. So we get on the train, and, you know, well, long story short, we're in the village. We're walking down 9th Street, and people are, like, kind of walking really slow, and I'm a little bit ahead of the group. And I see this guy crossing the street who looks kind of familiar. He's wearing black jeans, a short black leather jacket. He's got tousled black hair, kind of curly, but not quite, like, really messy, a little bit mushroomy.
Yeah.
And a prominent nose. Uh-huh. You're not quite getting it yet, are you?
No, I'm getting the image. Kind of like punk. He wants to be punk, but he's not punk.
I'm like, this guy looks kind of familiar. He's walking a certain way. I can't really describe it, but I've seen that walk before. So I'm like,
Is it like I'm swinging pipe walk?
No, he's just walking in a hurry, pretty much, actually. Crosses the street, and I'm like, oh, God, that cannot be who I think it is. I've already got an idea. I'm not going to tell you until the end here. And I cross the street, and he happens to be going the same direction. It's really funny because he turns on 3rd, and he goes up towards Stuyvesant. I'm like, oh, good, maybe I'll get a chance to catch up and just get a glimpse to see who it is. And he turns on the Stuyvesant, and I'm like, oh, my God, wait a minute, that's so funny. And he stops right outside Village Yokocho. And he takes out his phone, and he takes a little look at it. It might have been an iPhone, I'm not really sure. And he goes up the stairs. And, of course, I'm, like, freaking out. Oh, good, good. I'll finally get to see if it's who I think it is. So I go up the stairs, and I go up to try to find the hostess so I can tell them, oh, there's 9 of us. We need a table. And, of course, I use this opportunity to look and see who this gentleman is. And it is who I thought it was. It was Neil Gaiman.
The author of Sandman.
Yes. And American Gods and Stardust. Who, if everyone knows, he did a comic book legal defense fund event last night. And that was his only thing at New York Comic Con. He's not really doing any public signings other than that. Mm-hmm. I decide not to say anything.
So you stalked Neil Gaiman through the streets of New York.
I did not stalk him on purpose.
You followed him to where he got.
It actually gets a little funnier from here, though.
Uh-huh.
So, I mean, we're just standing there, and I, like, turn to the guy behind me who, you know, is part of the group, and I'm just like, oh my God, that's Neil Gaiman. And he's like, no, you're shitting me. And he goes up and looks, and he's like, holy shit, it's Neil Gaiman. 2 other guys from the con, they have those Air Force bags that we've been seeing all over the place. And they're like, oh, wow, hey, we came from the con, too. And Neil's just like, yeah, that's very nice. Hi, you know, hi.
Get lost, basically.
And he's nicer than that. Neil's a really nice guy. And I'm like, yeah, I'm sorry, Neil, you can't escape us. I actually chime in at this point. I said, and I'm not with these guys, just so you know. And he was like, oh, and I'm like, yeah, thank you for coming. And I know you did the Comic Book Legal Defense Fund. That's great. You know, thank you, Neil. That's awesome. And he's just like, yes. And, you know, so I go back down the stairs to talk to my friends because I'm like, oh, dudes, we're going to have to wait 30 minutes for a table. And they decide this is too long. We went somewhere else. That's the end of that story. Mm-hmm. But I went back into the restaurant to tell the hostess we were going to leave. And you know, the guy's like, okay, thank you. And I'm like, I'm sorry. And he's like, it's all right. And then Neil's still standing there, and I'm like, oh, thank you, Neil. You know, it's nice to see you. Oh, and I mean, yeah, I ran into Paul Cornell at the con. You know who Paul Cornell is? Yeah. I'll fill in the listeners. Yeah, Paul Cornell is a writer who wrote a bunch of Doctor Who novels. He's written some episodes, and he's going to be working on Excalibur, I believe it is.
Yes.
And I had run into him at the con. So I'm like, yeah, Neil, I ran into Paul Cornell, and because I figured Neil would know who Paul Cornell is. And Neil goes, yeah, I'm really hoping to run into him. We're supposed to be having dinner right now. That's the story.
You, my friend, kind of didn't want to stalk him, but he was, like, just there, and it was opportune.
I just have this magical ability to run into people. it's magic.
You know what? You want to know something? I was going down the West Side Highway, right, on my way down here. And at 57th Street at the light, you know, I go, and I'm doing one of these things. I look over, I see a guy wearing a black derby hat. I go back. My neck snaps back, right? And I'm like, whoa, my head isn't it? What is that who I think it is? And he shoots a smile at me. And I look back, and then I go, look away. This is his person's private time, right? And he goes, and he takes off his hat, and it's fucking Bruce Willis in a convertible BMW.
Oh,
and he goes,
wow.
Nods his head, and then hits the brake so fucking fast. It's like, someone recognized me, break the fuck out of here.
Yeah. Oh, boy.
So that's her story, man. You got a good story. I ran into Bruce Willis. I almost killed Howard Stern on 56th Street.
I actually have a funny Howard Stern story. I don't know if we should be putting this on the air, but I have an acquaintance, used to be a friend, whose parents own a house in the Hamptons. Mm. And I was staying there one weekend. And then Sunday morning, it's a weekend, it's Sunday morning, her mother runs in, she's like, everybody get up, we're showing the house to a renter, because they're trying to rent out the house, because it costs a lot of money to build. It's a gorgeous house, it's the most beautiful house I've ever seen. And so we stumble out of bed, and she shoves us in the freaking, the pool house, so we're sitting in the pool house for the next couple of hours. And eventually, we kind of see her lead the renter out of the house, and it's Howard Stern.
In all his curly hair glory.
Yeah, and she actually brings him over and introduces him to the group of us clustered there in the pool house looking like crap because we're still in our PJs. And instead of being, I guess she thought she was being funny because she's like, she points at me and the two other girls. She's like, oh, and this is the French maid, and this is our Danish cook, and here's our Swedish bitch.
Uh-huh.
And we're just like, what the hell was that?
Well, it's Howard Stern. He's edgy.
Yeah, she's trying to be edgy. Yeah, he didn't rent the house, if that tells you anything. But, I mean, I don't know if they ever did. It's, you know, if they ever hear this, I doubt they will. It's a beautiful house. I love your house. But that was kind of awkward. There was a funny side story that they were trying to show Howard one of the bedrooms, except the 7-year-old brother of my friend was in there, and he slammed the door in Howard Stern's face. And they asked him, why would you do that? He's famous. And his answer is, he looked like bad people.
Howard Stern, Bruce Willis, Neil Gaiman, and Paul Cornell. All funny stories and true stories of New York Comic Con 2008.
Yeah.
Mind Freak!
Alright, folks, I'm back here at day 3, and as you can tell, my voice is haggard, but I am surviving. And we're here with, the author of Peckerwood. And that would be Rob... how do you pronounce your last name, just so I don't butcher it?
Dunlop. That's with a British accent. So
Dunlop.
So with the American style, it will be Dunlop.
You know what? My last name is Levenstein, so I kind of know how it feels to have your name mispronounced.
I swear to God, most contacts I have with America, they get my name spelt wrong. Even when I send them an email and they're writing back, they call me Ron, R-O-N,
uh-huh.
Dunlap.
Oh,
every
my God.
Single time, LAP at the end.
I've been Ian Levenstein my entire life.
Okay, so join the club.
Yeah, right, definitely. So tell us a little bit about Peckerwood.
So Peckerwood is the third book from Ablaze Media, which it's self-published. And so I'm the writer, and the artist is here in New York as well for the con, and that's Peter Lumby. So we've been doing these parody books for about 6 years now. Peckerwood 24 Minutes is out in June this year.
Okay.
So it's in April previews.
Right.
Just to get the plug in there.
Yeah.
And it's a movie parody, or specifically it's a TV parody, this one, around the TV show 24.
And so, the whole 24 minutes thing is.
There we go. So, as in the TV show is obviously there's a ridiculous like situation with the timing going on.
Uh-huh.
He goes all around LA. He flies to Mexico and back. Everything in like you couldn't do in a week. He does in 24 hours. So we just take that concept and amp it up to 11. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, he always manages to do everything without even going to the bathroom once, which always pains me.
Oh, exactly. Well, we got the toilet humor in there as well, so we have
good.
That covered.
Good. Good to hear. So, have you just been a fan of 24 since it's been on the air? Is that how long you've had the concept in your head? Or
yeah, it's interesting. The first book we did was like a Harry Potter spoof. And the second book was like a Star Wars parody. So now moving on to 24, all these franchises, obviously huge franchises.
Right.
And they all start off as like, you know, I'm a massive fan. And then it's like, what the hell is going on with these things? This is so overkill. Or, you know, I need to burst some ego bubbles here. So again, with 24, starts off as an amazing concept. And then the more you watch it, the more ridiculous stuff you have, the more ammunition I get to write these parody comics.
You know, I've actually been thinking for the last couple of years who would actually win in a fight, Chuck Norris or Jack Bauer. It's a tough decision to make.
I think Jack Bauer, or as we call him, Jack Badass, he is the meanest guy on the planet. So.
Now, did I see right that he works for Twat, or was that just one of the jokes?
Yeah, you guys say Twat, we say Twat.
Okay.
Now, there's a difference, because in America, it's a much more filthy word. It means the same thing.
Okay.
But because, I don't know, maybe our pronunciation, but we, you know, teachers at my school would call the kids twats in the same way as they call them twits.
Oh, my God.
It's like, it's not a big deal. It's not like the C word, really.
Yeah,
But it's, I think, more so it is in the States.
All twit is here is a podcast. That's all.
All right. There we go.
Yeah, This Week in Tech, we will report. Listen to it. Yeah, good stuff. But also, I know you're not the artist, but the art style works perfectly for a parody comic of this variety, I think.
Yeah, it was deliberate. It wasn't like, because I've known Pete, the artist, for a long time. We were at art school together. It wasn't that, you know, we thought of the comic concept after having seen his style. He very much adapted his style to the style of my humor. So, I mean, he can do a lot of things. He does, like, video game concept work,
right.
You know, storyboarding, you know, he does illustration. So he's like a bird of many feathers or whatever
sure.
the expression is. I think he's been influenced by Mike Mignola, maybe Jimmy Hewlett. He'd probably deny all this and say it's his own unique spin, but yeah, it's very much that kind of, I guess, anime influence as well.
That's
feel to it. But I think when you've got a Naked Gun or Scary Movie style comedy, you know, you want it to be, you want the jokes not to be hampered by intricate detail. Everything's got to be quite fast and furious, so it's kind of simplistic, but, you know, very appealing artwork, I would say. You know?
Yeah, well, the first thing that came to me, because I've been reading Volume 1 of Penny Arcade recently, that's right away the style that came to me with the art, and it is like, right away you think in your head, this is going to be a humor book, and that's exactly what it delivers, so it works.
Yeah. And as with Penny Arcade, I think, you know, we've gone for the high production values, you know, it's all full color throughout, so,
right.
You know, it's, everything is... in aid of a smooth delivery of the gag, I guess.
You know, obviously,
I'm the writer. I'm going to say this is the most important goddamn thing in the book. It's delivering my jokes, right?
Yeah, so. Come on. I mean, you got to have pretty art anywhere. You got to have a story to back it up.
Yeah, so people come along to the booth and they say, hey, wow, it looks amazing. And I'm like, yeah, but it's funny, right?
Now, were you a fan of parody comics growing up?
Yeah, I mean, I guess this is a movie parody, so it's no surprise that movies are my big, big influence.
Yeah, yeah.
So, I mean, I read, like, Asterix books and that kind of thing.
Uh-huh.
They're a huge deal in Europe, obviously, like, that connection. So, yeah, that was probably my biggest influence as a kid. Less so the superhero stuff, which has, like, totally shaped me now as a creator.
Yeah.
But, yeah, like, the movies, like Airplane, Naked Gun, totally. I'm all about, you know, the Zucker Brothers and Monty Python as well, undeniably, you know.
Any, really any Mel Brooks
influence.
In there?
Absolutely. He used to be funny, so I remember that. In the Golden Age, so...
Zing, there you go.
Yeah, the producers, man. Blazing Saddles.
Oh, yeah,
awesome,
yeah.
You know?
The old days, man, the old days. Nothing quite like that bean joke. Gets me every time.
Absolutely.
All right, well, you want to give the website out there for everybody?
Absolutely. It's ablazemedia.com. So that's ABLAZE, not Z, ZE, media.com, ablazemedia.com. So if you pop along there, and we have contact details and stuff, so you guys can shoot us a line, and we'll get back to you.
And we got British listeners, too, so don't worry, Zed works.
Oh, yeah. So, yeah, we got British listeners?
I'm sure we do. Yeah, well, we
do a lot of cons in Britain, so, you know, they can come along and big your site up as well, and so that'd be great if they, you know, say hello to us when we're around.
Excellent, great. Well, I'm glad to say hello to you now. Thanks for joining us, man.
Cheers. Good to be on the show.
All right, great, excellent. If this is the last interview of the show, then it is. If it isn't, well, then you're listening to more. We'll be back. Yeah. All right, ladies and gentlemen, back here at New York Comic Con. It's still day three. I'm still alive, but barely. And, we got ourselves an interview with an interesting person here. I wanted you to introduce yourself to the crowd out there.
My name is Tom Filsinger. I'm the owner of Filsinger Publishing, and we've just produced Stan Lee's new book of photo humor called Election Days. I guess that's the best project we've been working on lately, and the most interesting.
Oh, sure. Well, I mean, it's Stan Lee, you know? I mean, it's hard to say a bad thing about the guy who's been in the business longer than most and started almost a comic book revolution back in the day.
Yeah.
So what sort of political humor is he doing in the book?
Well, it's really a book that just sort of makes fun of everybody equally, you know? It's just got everybody.
Democrats, Republicans, the works, independent.
You got photos of people like Hillary Clinton, Barack Obama, George Bush, really just about everybody who's been involved with this political season.
Right.
And with just funny word balloons over all of them. And we got award-winning photography, so we got really solid photography.
Yeah.
And Stan's stuff, and it's just hilarious. Now, you know, he started this stuff in the 60s.
Really?
The irony of that is that it all coincided with his creating the Marvel Universe.
Wow.
Which is what surprised me.
Yeah.
So in 1961, he did a book of photo humor on golf,
boy,
of all the topics. Sold out.
Uh-huh.
And for a moment there, he said he thought, you know, he could make more money doing that than in comics, and he was like wavering between the two.
So we came close to political humorist Stan Lee versus comic book creator Stan Lee.
Yes. He did political. First it was golf.
Uh-huh.
Then he did monster humor.
Okay.
Universal photos of Frankenstein, Dracula, the Wolfman, with funny dialogue over them.
Yeah.
Produced them through Marvel for years. And he also then did some political stuff, too.
Oh, wow. That's interesting. And he just put that on hold for a few years and went on back to it now with the new book?
Yeah. Yeah. The last time he'd done this, I believe, was between the 1970s.
Okay.
And then, like you say, he didn't do it for a long time.
Uh-huh.
And I think what the story goes, that somebody gave him a copy of one of those old books at a recent convention.
Mm-hmm.
And he looked at it and thought, you know, I'd really like to do this again. I think it could sell. I think it's a funny idea, and he loves to do it.
Right.
You know, Stan Lee is a very funny guy.
Oh, sure, yeah. Well, please, you go to any panel that he does, or you listen to any interview that he does, and you know that this man is so chock full of stories and chock full of wit, dry wit and humor, that it's right in his wheelhouse.
Absolutely. He has not lost any of it.
Yeah.
We did a panel this morning at 11.
Uh-huh.
And it focused on the new book, Election Days.
Right.
And it was, Stan, the audience, we just all laughed the whole time. It was just fantastic.
Well, actually, I had the pleasure of going to one of his Who Wants to Be a Superhero panels in San Diego last year. And even with something like that, I mean, you know, it's a freaking, reality show about superheroes, and he still manages to spin it so well.
Yeah.
It's like the tongue on this man is made of silver.
That's right.
What comes out of his mouth is gold.
Oh, it's hilarious.
So tell us a little bit more about the company, if you don't mind. I mean, what sort of stuff have you done in the past?
Okay, well, it started, you know, I was interested in comics. That kind of started me off into creating a game, actually.
Okay.
So I've had a game company now for 20 years, mm-hmm. Filsinger Games.
Mm-hmm.
We put out a game called Champions of the Galaxy in 1986. It was a cards and dice game. Now it's also an online simulation.
Oh, wow.
Takes a real universe of futuristic wrestlers.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if anybody else is doing that yet, but I guarantee you I was the first.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, it's funny. I actually, when I was a kid and I was still into wrestling, I actually used to e-wrestle, which was, I think the best way to describe it is you would write these scenarios for these wrestlers that you would create, write full paragraphs, do interview style, and then whoever was running the e-fed would decide who won by who did the best promo, write out a full match. And that's the way it goes. But I've since fallen out of favor with wrestling a little bit. But I can see the appeal in what you're doing there, because there are plenty of wrestling fans out there that are online looking for things to do. Why not do that?
Yeah. Well, when we first put it out, what's funny about it is I didn't know whether the wrestling world was ready for futuristic wrestlers, aliens wrestling, animalistic characters. You know, we've got all kinds of stuff, races of people, animal races, aliens, zombies. But I still tried to keep it pretty realistic with wrestling.
Sure.
Anyway, I put out those ads, and the wrestling market did take to it. It was weird, though. The comic book market at that stage was not open to that yet. It took to the 90s when wrestlers like The Undertaker, who are
practically
fantasy characters already, then the crossover started to happen, and the game really took off for me at that stage. It was about the late 90s. So we've got 35 expansions. This is a serious universe that we've created.
Okay.
Yeah, and so we're also promoting, of course, that here, too.
Sure.
Then, because I've got nothing better to do but just create things and ignore my family totally, I created some calendars that were just a fun item. The first one was to count down to your wedding day. And every day you tear off a page and it's a joke sort of a countdown just for fun. I don't want to talk about that long. It actually relates to Stan Lee, which is the funny part.
Okay.
That's sort of like getting a Hallmark card every day. It's a good gift for a wedding.
Right. Now,
I mailed a copy to Stan because we'd been in touch with each other. This is about 4 years ago.
Yeah.
And he wrote back to me and said, this is the best publishing idea I've ever seen. I thought, wow, thank you. That's very nice of you to say.
Get a compliment from Stan Lee like that,
But that was when he thought, if I'm going to do a political humor book, and Tom Filsinger is producing these humorous calendars, I'm gonna ask him to do this with me.
He knows where to turn.
And it worked. And, you know, of course, I never would have ever imagined that, but I was thrilled that it happened that way. And working with him has been fantastic because... we'd send him photos that he could use for the book. Like, we tried to take humorous situations, like Hillary. We got one Hillary looking real bug-eyed while she's talking to somebody. You know, there's a lot you can do with that.
Oh, please, come on! I mean, there's so many pictures of Bush out there. They'll make him look like a monkey. It's ridiculous.
Yeah, right. And it doesn't even take an unusual pose.
Oh, please, please tell me about it. All you got to do is just like take one shot of him with the deer in headlights looking. Yeah. And it's a problem solved right
problem
there,
solved.
Man. That's it.
So we'd send him photos, and he would never even filter them. He just send back caption for everyone we sent him. To him, he said it was like a crossword puzzle. He always had to figure out a joke for everything he got.
Right.
And so we had so much to choose from by the time we put the book together. He really enjoyed doing it. It was a great course to work with him.
Great. Excellent. Now, how long have you been interested in humor in general? I mean, like when you were coming up, growing up, I mean, were you into like Mad Magazine, that sort of thing?
Yeah, definitely. All the time. I'm always into humor, you know? But I don't know if it... took the form of book humor, like you said, Mad. Of course, I brought not brand Yek or whatever
in those days.
You know. I'm always following. I like political humor today, like Lewis Black and John Stewart and all of those.
Oh yeah. So,
yeah.
Have you actually had a chance to catch Lewis Black's new show, Root of All Evil?
Yeah.
Very easily becoming my favorite show on Comedy Central.
That's hilarious.
Week after week, it's like a political. Come on, when you have things like Paris Hilton versus Donald Trump. Donald Trump. Who is more evil? It's hard to even
that's
say.
The thing. It kills you. You know, you never know what to choose.
I know. Tell me about it. And comic books. I mean, obviously, you must have had a little bit of a love for that to get to know Stan Lee.
More than a little. Yeah. I mean. Other kids would buy the comics. I bought them in the 60s, just when they were coming out, the when Marvel was new.
Right.
And the other kids would buy Spider-Man number 15, like I did, and they would actually, you know, bend the pages back when they read it, and I thought, well, you don't do that. You know, this is like the Bible or something. You don't ever do that. Or they would actually, there would be a Spider-Man pinup in it, and they would tear the page
tear out
and put it on their wall, and I thought, boy, you guys are, I don't know about you, but I was already... You know, wanting them to be look like they were never read before.
You were a speculator before the speculator era.
Yeah. It was that era. Yeah, I think that's when really it all started. I really do. People, there was such continuity in the Marvel comics, which there wasn't in any other ones.
Oh, sure, yeah.
That you felt like you had to keep them and you wanted to keep them in good condition. Mm-hmm. I believe that was the start of real, true collector's market burgeoning.
Yeah. You know, it's funny. I actually still have on my wall at home the fold-out cover from X-Men number 1. back in, I believe, 91 or 89 or something like that. And I bought a second copy because I'm like, okay, if I'm going to tear this one out, I got to keep one in perfect pristine condition for one someday when X-Men number one is huge. I mean, of course, I didn't know at the time. I'm like, there were like 10 covers. And, you know, I mean, over expansion, millions and millions of copies. I mean, back then in the 90s, you thought you were going to make $1 million on this someday. And yeah, it's like $3 in the bin these days because there's so many copies out there.
Yeah.
You know, and that's over expansion going back. Yeah. You know, over expansion going back. Right now we're back to what, 300,000 copies sold for most comics?
Yeah, I don't know.
So that's the way it rolls. But anyway, you want to give the website out there for the folks?
Yeah, well, gosh, I would hope that they'd check out Phil Singer Games. Now, Phil Singer is F-I-L Singer and then Games.
Yeah.
That'll get them to Champions of the Galaxy and Legends of Wrestling.
Yeah.
Which is, by the way, that game features the real wrestlers that we've licensed for
them. Oh, great.
So
excellent.
That's cool, yeah.
That's WWE, WCW.
Not them. You know,
not them, but the...
Approaching the wrestlers as individuals.
Gotcha.
A lot of them are retired now, like Jimmy Superfly, Snuka, the Road Warriors. But all those guys are in the game. So Hawk of the Road Warriors, he was awesome.
Oh, yeah.
But let's see, then... For the publishing, it would be Phil Singer, then publishing.com.
Okay.
We've got Stan Lee's book.
Yeah.
But Stan Lee's book is doing great, by the way. It's in Borders. It's in Barnes & Noble. It's at Amazon.com. Last week, it was the number two hot new release in political books. So it's doing good at Amazon.
Great.
We're going for a broad market there. You know, there's a lot of people who love Stan Lee.
Of course.
But don't really, I mean, in the comic market.
They don't know his full scope.
But a lot of people who have heard of him but don't know anything else. This is the kind of book you'd get your mother, your aunt, your friend, and say, this is from Stan Lee. And they go, oh, cool, an election humor book.
And
that's
they'll
great.
Be amazed that it's from Stan Lee.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, the creator of Spider-Man. Hey, he writes political humor, too.
Absolutely. Yeah. These books used to sell millions of copies, and that's what we're going for. Now I want millions of copies so that I can sit down and stop doing so many things.
How'd the signing at Borders go, by the way?
Great. You know what they said there? When it was all over, and Stan was on as usual, by the way, and he was great. We asked the Borders people, so how was the crowd? How do you think? He said, that's the best crowd we've gotten for anybody since Jimmy Carter.
Oh, wow.
And so that's pretty good when Stan's right up there with former presidents.
Please, please. Well, in some people's minds, he is right up there with former presidents.
Yeah,
so there
you go.
The Pope
was in town. The Pope was in line.
All right, man. Well, thank you very, very much for stopping on by.
Thank
and
you.
Make sure to check out Stan Lee's book. In fact, I'm probably going to go on Amazon when I get home and order up a copy of myself. I'll let you know what I think.
Fantastic. Sounds good.
Excellent.
Thank you for having me on.
You're quite welcome. You're quite welcome. This might very well be the last interview. If it's not, you'll hear some more. If not, then I'll talk to you guys later.
Who's that?
So wrapping us up on day three here at New York Comic Con, I've got a little preview of what you'll get on part two of this episode, which will be released as, well, a two-parter with Geeks Unite and Comic Timing, so how weird is that? We got Juan and Danny here. What's going on?
Hey, what's going on?
Hey, what's up?
And we got a wonderful, wonderful Ant-Man and Iron Man from Mr. Maxim Glory.
And it's before he's a douchebag.
That is a lie.
And
he
ladies
was always
and gentlemen,
a douchebag?
That is another lie.
For the first
he was
time.
Kind of a douchebag.
A small white lie.
For the first time, Rick Gordon is on Comic Timing.
Whoa! Hey, where's he going? Are you leaving the forums? Is he leaving the forums?
He's not leaving the forums.
You're not leaving the forums?
He's not leaving the forums. It's
hey,
all good.
Come do your best. Oh, you love Betty?
Betty's getting some good times right over there.
It's a special laminated edition.
Betty's going after Veronica. All right, anyway. So Juan and Danny here. Give us your quick wrap-up at a con before we do anything else. So, go ahead.
It was Danny's first con, wasn't it? So why don't you go first?
Well, it was my first time here. I've definitely first time with a mic near me or any other person. I loved it. Actually getting to talk to some of the artists and listening to people, especially about their inspirations and things like that.
Sweet. Awesome. And Juan, for you?
Oh, man. It was a phenomenal experience. I've been here since 8 o'clock every single goddamn day. I went through 4 mocha lattes, and I probably spent about $40 at the Starbucks downstairs.
Oh, geez.
Today. Nevertheless, yesterday and the day before, you know.
Yeah.
I got coffee drinkers.
You know what? Honestly, I found, like, this real bad geek crush, and his name is Greg Magnus.
Oh.
Robot fighter.
What? You love me? I know. You owe me $10, though.
Well, how was the con for you, Mr. Geek Trush?
A pretty solid show all around. Some good attendance, but not stifling like San Diego. Plenty of pros in it. Oh, San Diego? Yeah, San Diego's ridiculous. You can't even
walk around.
San Diego's
crazy compared to this, yeah. You can actually walk around this con.
It's nice to know that we have a legitimate Comic-Con still out there. You know, like a big con, it's still a Comic-Con first, as opposed to, you know, there's not much out there like that. Baltimore, maybe, not maybe the only one left, especially on the East Coast.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
And, you know, it's good to know that, you know, it's in New York. The pros can all be here. We can get guys like Morrison coming over from across the pond. It's fantastic to have them here. And it was just a really good show, packed with stuff. I wish there was, frankly, I wish there were a few more hours in the day with some more programming so I could see more panels that I actually wanted to see. But definitely a good time. I highly recommend.
That'll improve from year to year. Improve from year to year with the whole
panel. I recommend
thing.
You come back next year in February again when it's 8 degrees. Have fun, everybody.
Sadly, that's the way things go. But, you know, because they're still a new con. They can't really, you know, say we want it in April no matter what.
Yeah, but they're already a new con that has split off into two cons.
Right. Yeah, the Anime
show,
Fest.
The show has recognized that it outgrows itself.
Yeah.
It's New York Anime Fest in September, right?
Right.
And then New York.
Best thing about this year was that they figured out how to fill people in without complete chaos.
Oh, yeah.
Stories, just stories upon stories. I don't think 10 people said they were going last year. 10 people I know did not get in last year.
Oh, boy.
And both days I came, both Friday and Sunday, I had no problem getting in.
And Rick Gordon delivering the candy
the
to finish it off.
Interesting.
Yes. And look out.
That shit was what?
Well,
bro, you can't do that.
Well,
did you eat that?
Just part of it.
Okay. All right. That's good enough.
All right. No, but
yeah.
But
yeah.
Honestly,
no. I get it. Don't worry. Your humor is not lost on me, Mr. Rick Gordon. Don't worry about it. Oh, man.
I'm really glad, like Danny said, that they got that three entrances going.
Definitely.
But it just means you're attacked from all sides.
That is true, but at the same time, you can get in this year.
Yeah.
You know, so I'd rather be attacked on all sides than be standing outside not being attacked at all.
I agree entirely. So, I mean, my con experience, I bought way too many HeroClix, bought a couple trades.
Kidding? I bought like 20.
Oh, geez. Yeah, same here.
I got the entire Justice League and two versions of Titans.
Brilliant.
I think I funded something for David Mack. I'm not quite sure what yet, but I'm sure it's at least a new pair.
Oh, here comes the beach ball.
Here we go. No. It's got to deflate on its own. But, yeah, the beach ball is our little mascot here at New York Comic Con. And now Chris is hugging it to try and get rid of the air. So let's see. But, and along with that, I got a couple of... I got my Batman Series 1 Harley Quinn, which I was glad to get. And I got Daredevil Volume 2, David Mack. Mm-hmm. Nice to get. You guys got David Mack, which was
we
even better
David
for you
Mack.
Guys.
We got Gail Simone.
Yeah, got Gail Simone also. And
Carmine.
Raging Bullets has got Gail Simone for their panel. And you'll hopefully be hearing that on Raging Bullets pretty time soon.
Yeah, and also it got updated onto DC Comics feed.
Yes, indeed. And we're going to have some panel wrap-ups and stuff like that on the next part here. But just wanted to give a quick wrap-up for everybody out there so the episode can actually end here at the con as opposed to in my bedroom. So
you know something?
Every episode ends in my bedroom.
That's what she said.
And you know something? Batman is still in there pissing in the bathroom.
Yeah. And since Raph isn't here, my parents are dead.
My parents are dead.
Thank you. Thank you very much. It can't be a con without my parents are dead. But
don't go on Jerry Springer.
Uh-oh.
Con food sucks.
You know what? Those funnel cakes, not that bad.
Actually, the chicken sandwich for $6
How
downstairs.
How much was that burger?
That burger was $7.
They had
that burger
frozen
was
lemonade four. For $3. Yeah. And considering how difficult it is to find frozen lemonade, totally worth it.
There's still a fundamental problem with the chicken sandwich. For $6.
Yeah, no, I know, but it was still the cheapest thing in the entire place. You know, a grilled chicken sandwich with, an aioli and a honey mustard sauce, that's good enough for me.
Oh, Mr. Fancy Man, with your aioli and honey mustard sauce.
Well, ooh, freaking la la, all right.
Honey mustard sauce.
Aioli and honey mustard sauce.
I don't even know what the fuck that is.
Let's finish wrapping this up here, shall we, all right? Before we get into a food conversation, all right?
Why do we pull this train over?
Out of five, what do you give the con, Danny?
5, definitely.
Give it a 4. There's always room.
I think a solid 4. There's room for improvement.
Uh-huh.
4.4.
4.4, that'll do.
I like the 4 with a high decimal.
Okay.
Well, I say four because of one reason. Still too many goddamn dealers selling swords.
Right.
In a place where they sell alcohol.
Yeah.
It's dangerous.
I know. And I'm giving it about a 7.5 out of 5, so that's fine.
What?
I'm giving it about a 7.5 out of 5, so.
It was a good experience. It was different, and it was good.
So. Right,
I can't complain about the sword dealers because I definitely bought sharp toys, so I can't really complain about them.
Wait, what I think of the con?
Yeah, Chris, what do you think of the con?
I thought it was okay. What, I have to score it out of a 5? Whoa. That is inadequate.
Well, then just talk about the con.
It is a GPA of 3.4.
That'll do.
Not quite honor roll, but it's acceptable.
Is it heavily graded?
Heavily graded?
It's heavily weighted.
Weighted? No, I didn't weight that. If I weight it, then it actually goes above a 3.5, because then you got to consider this is the New York area, and our convention selection sucks.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, okay, compare it to last year, better or worse?
Oh, that definitely better. I mean, we had programming. We had actual programming that people wanted to attend.
Which is definitely fun.
Logistics-wise, we're still kind of iffy. You know, anybody who tried to go to the reboot panel, followed by Gail Simone.
Yeah. You know, all in the smallest panel at the con.
Yes.
Which wasn't a good idea, but what are you going to
do? I don't think they recognize how big Gail is.
I don't think they recognize how big Reboot is either.
No.
Yeah.
I don't think they recognize a lot of things yet.
Yeah.
I mean, I think these aisles could be redone. They could be a little wider in some places.
Yeah.
We're right next to the door. This should not be a small aisle. This needs to be huge.
That and there's no such thing as 1.5 aisle booths. So they definitely got to stop doing that. Where yes, like the DC booth is 1.5 aisles and you got to walk around to get to the other side of the aisle.
Yes.
That's a bit of a pain in the ass. But
DC should share their carpeting.
Yeah, where does DC get that carpet? It's like awesome.
Tokyo Pop. Tokyo Pop's carpeting
every
is really...
time I walk past, I would purposely walk over their carpet just to relieve my feet.
No, I'm being honest. I did it too. Gail Simone told me she did it.
And raise your hand if you're stealing a beanbag chair. Everybody's raising their hand. There you go.
So this is the wrap-up, right?
This is the wrap-up.
This is the end. This is the end.
We're pulling it over, but it's not the end because you're going to hear even more in the next episode.
Hi, everybody.
For that girl came, I can't find that feeling.
Yeah. By the way, you should probably, that's what she said, that girl that came. The email address for Comic Timing is comictiming@gmail.com. Don't forget to check out the forums over at thecomicforums.com/forums. Quick to your host, but a Comic Geek Speak, guys, over at comicgeekspeak.com. Proud members of the Comics Podcast Network. Thank you to Joe Gonzalez for setting up the podcast arena. Yeah, he's not here right now, but he is in spirit. Thanks for Sean and Jim for putting me up last night. And we're proud members of the League of Comic Book Podcasts, so we're over at comicbooknoise.com/league. iTunes, Podcast Alley, all that crap. And as always, there's always...
time for comics!
Damn Skippy. See you guys next time.
Bitch.
Let's go back to the writing a little bit here, because I cough. Whoa, hello. Yeah, no, wow. Yeah, see, it's been a long day already, as you can tell.
Right.